Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today I have the pleasure of having Father Maurice Nutt, who is a priest out of St. Louis. He's going to join us on the program today to talk about being black in the Catholic Roman Catholic Church. If you have any questions, free to call in at 347-324-3460, or you can post your question in the chat room and read it on the air. Well, Father Nutt, thank you for joining the program.
Tim, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. Hope all is going well with you.
Same here. I guess just to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself and about your calling to become a priest, and then we can just segue into the being into the Catholic Church.
Great, Tim. As you introduced me, we've known each other for a while, so you knew me in my St. Louis days. St. Louis mm-hmm. is my hometown. I was born and raised a cradle Catholic, raised in the parish of St. Alphonsus Liguori Rock Church Parish, where I served as pastor there from 1993 to 2002. Currently, I am stationed in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm a part of the Redemptorist Parish Mission Team. The Redemptorists mm-hmm. were founded in 1732 by St. Alphonsus Liguori, not to have regular parishes per se, but to go from city to city preaching the good news, especially to the poor, most abandoned. So I'm a
wow.
part of that mission right now. It's just to go from city to city. It's called Catholic revivalism, to renew and to instill a deeper appreciation for the Catholic faith and for the Word of God, most especially.
Wow. Kind of take us back for a second. How long have you been a priest now in the church?
Yes, this year, 2012, marks my 23rd year as a priest. So it's been
wow.
23 years.
And how was the experience of you? Did you decide to become a priest right after high school or at the college?
Well, actually, I was inspired, Tim, at a very, very early age. I came from a very strong religious family. My mother was Catholic and my father was Baptist. However, unfortunately, my father died when I was 3 years old, so I didn't have any strong connections with the Baptist Church because I was actually raised as a Catholic, baptized as an infant. But it was mm-hmm. at an early age that I was inspired by the priesthood, and it wasn't really any powerful preaching or the liturgy that really moved and motivated me to be a priest, but it was actually the Christian witness and the work of evangelization and social service, especially to the poor. I saw white priests going through our African-American inner-city neighborhood, just really being present to people and trying to help them out, both socially and spiritually. So at the age of 13, I actually went to a high school prep seminary in Wisconsin. So I mm-hmm. began my journey towards priesthood right in high school, actually.
Wow. And in choosing, you know, you can either be a diocesan priest there locally or an order. How did you choose this particular order?
Well, the Redemptorist priests were the pastors of St. Alphonsus Rock Church, and
okay.
And it's amazing because for my Protestant relatives, it made a lot of sense because when they asked me, well, why are you joining that order, and what do they do, what do you do? I said, we preach the Word of God in season and out of season. We're full-time evangelistic revivalists. So they were like, what, revivalists in the Catholic Church? So it was really an easy sale to my Protestant relatives, but my Catholic relatives, my brothers and my mother were certainly very supportive of my calling to be a priest.
Okay. And when you started college, I mean, this is an 8-year program, a 9-year program?
Yes, actually, it's a 4 years of college, 4 years of theology school, and if you're in a religious order, it's typically 1 year of what they call a novitiate year, a time of preparation. So actually, it was 9 years of preparation from college on to be a priest.
Wow. And in your days of being in college, you're there as a seminarian in that first 4 years. Do they allow you just to pick any major you want, or you got to be at this particular
due to the fact that we have had a self-contained college seminary, a suburb of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, it was difficult. We had more choices for our minors. Our majors were our major direction was to get a degree in philosophy. And I chose to minor in communication, Tim, so that I wanted to always be able to think critically and to speak articulately. So that
Wow.
was the reason I put my major and minor together.
Okay. And did you join any fraternities while you're there that allow you to have joined different groups?
No, they did not at the time of being in college, but I'm so glad that you give me a segue to say that I am a proud life member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, the oldest, the coldest, and the boldest fraternity. First of all, servants of all, we shall transcend all. I'm a good alpha man. My dad was an alpha, and so it was actually as a priest I joined the fraternity as a priest because I believe in what they're about and what we stand for, our mission.
Wow. I know you just got back from a conference, just a week ago, right?
Right, right. I was in Minneapolis for our Midwestern Region Convention, so I'm very active. So I'm father brother, so.
You know, it's a funny thing. My stepbrother, we went to something in Tulsa, and I said, okay, I'll just meet you there on the very last day, but it's amazing. His fat brothers who are the older guys in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and they come down with a cane, they still working it.
Oh, yeah. They're the cane crew, so he's a Kappa. That's
the
all right.
Crew.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, great
they're
men
60s,
as well.
60s, 70s, and 80s.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, it's a good professional bond of black male brotherhood, and I think that is so important.
Well, tell us this journey regarding the Catholic Church. It's being black is, you know, going back to who we are probably in the 1800s, how did blacks become Catholic?
Well, if I can just briefly take you further back, people like to begin with Catholicism starting with slavery, and yet if we know the history of the Roman Catholic Church, you have to understand that the church began in Africa and on the continent of Africa, because, you know, a lot of people don't think that Jerusalem and in the Middle East, they think that it's suspended somewhere, but it's right there in the northern eastern tip of the continent, that the Holy Land is in Africa. So it began there. One of the oldest Christian churches is the Coptic Ethiopian Rite Roman Catholic Church. So the church began with the Coptic Rite, before which predates the Roman Catholic Rite of Catholicism. The Church of Alexandria, you have the great saint, Saint Augustine of Hippo. You have Tertullian and Origen. You have Saint Athanasius, Saint Anthony of Egypt, who started monasticism. You know, black folks did all that. And so when you understand the roots of Catholicism, I can't believe people can stereotype Catholicism as merely a European or a white man's religion, as it's been said. And so although this is what the downfall was when slavery began, there were bishops and religious women and men who owned slaves in the Catholic Church, and the reason why that it was Pope Gregory the 16th in 1839 put out an edict from Rome to abolish slavery throughout the world. That in 1839 he said, "You are to free slaves, Africans who have been enslaved." The southern bishops never did adhere to the Pope's request, and they held on to their slaves. And the reason that they didn't evangelize and baptize African Americans to Catholicism, because the role of baptism signified that a person who was baptized becomes your equal and your brother or sister, and human nature did not allow them to really free and understand Africans as being able to be their equal, their counterpart, their brothers and sisters. It was in the cities of New Orleans and Baltimore, respectfully, that that many Catholics began to evangelize the black community. And that's why even today, those are two major hubs, Baltimore, Maryland, and New Orleans, Louisiana, are where slavery, many slaves were baptized and many were freed and were practicing their Catholicism very freely. We also know about segregation in the Catholic churches. There were many separate churches, a black Catholic church and a white Catholic church, or if you went to a black church, if you went to a Catholic church that was predominantly white, you had to sit in the back or in the balcony. All that kind of racism and that segregationism was going on in our churches. One of the sins of our Catholic past in America.
Wow. You know, talking about New Orleans, I mean, Louisiana has a strong connection. I think you find, I'm not sure, I'm just guessing, you find more Catholics, black Catholics in that particular region. And then, all, like you just mentioned, also Baltimore. But, you know, being the South, how in the world did that happen, that from that particular region there is more Catholics, black Catholics, than anywhere in the country? Than were they allowed?
Yeah, you have to understand, excuse me, the French and the Spanish. The French were very much liberal. They didn't have a lot of the hang-ups that the Germans and the Irish had. In fact, there was a lot of intermarriages, and they were not even married, but there was a lot of taking Africans as their mistresses, and they would raise their children and send them to France, and all of that was going on back in that time. So they shared, not only did they share with our African women romantically, they also shared with them with their faith, and they took care of a lot of their offspring.
Wow. And then go to the other part of the country, Baltimore. How has that become a hub?
That was a hub due to a lot of the Haitians coming up, and again, and some of the French, and it was just more of a open environment. You know, Baltimore is just above the southern plain, but a lot of Catholics there were evangelized by many of the Haitian and Cuban Catholics that had settled in that area. And although there was segregation, Tim, many of, especially notably, you have to speak of Baltimore, you have to speak of the oldest black religious women founded in America, and that would be the Oblate Sisters of Providence, founded in July of 1829. And in the basement of St. Mary's Church, they began to evangelize and baptize and catechize African children, building up orphanages and schools for them. And they're even present to this very day in Baltimore.
Wow. And and also you have the sisters out of Louisiana.
Yes, I have to say something about Mother Henriette DeLille and the Holy Family Sisters. Again, similarly in New Orleans, she was a free woman of color who could have been a concubine to a great Frenchman and lived a life accordingly that way to be very well taken care of as a woman of color, but an aristocrat. She negated all that and denounced all that and chose to serve the enslaved Africans by educating them and taking care of the elderly and building orphanages and catechizing them. And so I'm very proud to say today she's a venerable recognized by the Roman Catholic Church, and we're praying for her cause of sainthood to come soon.
Wow. What do you, out of that time period, you go into the past century, and then that was like the boom of Catholics becoming, blacks becoming Catholics. at that particular time. What caused that across the nation? Because you had this big old boom coming through the church, then all of a sudden the last part of the decade of the last century,
right.
Then people start to leave, or their children start to leave, rather.
You have to speak of that in especially the northern cities. You have to parallel that with the Great Migration, the Great Black Migration that happened in the early part of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, when many African Americans began to migrate to the north. They were looking for better lives economically, and not only economically, educationally. And the Catholic Church is always, I don't care what people think or say about the Catholic Church, one of our flagship institutions have always been our educational system. We have had stellar schools in the African-American Catholic community, in the African-American community, and we didn't educate because kids were Catholic. We educated because we were Catholic. That was part of our mission. So that's why you had so many African-Americans going to Catholic schools, and many had chose to convert. For others, they saw it not only for the education, but unfortunately, I say unfortunately because you don't join a religion because of status, but the Roman Catholic Church offered African Americans a sense of being a quote-unquote better than or a higher-up status. That was also true to be said above the Episcopal Church. Many African Americans, I believe, they lost themselves by joining a religion sometimes that they did not always bring their culture into it. Leading into that, it was really the late 60s that African Americans around the civil rights movement began to say, we want faith and culture in our religious experience as Roman Catholics. African American Catholics were able to say, we bring all of ourselves, our culture, our music, our rhythm, our song, our stories, everything we bring to our faith, which is important because your personal cultural experiences is how you experience God. So you theologize. You come to an understanding of who God is by knowing who you are, because we are all made in the image and likeness of God. And so to say that, Tim, is to say that my God understands me as an African-American man and all that that entails.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you when we talked about the school religion, that played a big part of the growth, as you mentioned, of the Catholic migration as they come out of the South and, you know, go to the Midwest and other parts of the country? You think because a foundation of you in the environment and that's what you know, and you took that with you, and then that since that's the only thing you know, you just stay with it.
Yes.
And go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, that's fine. And also I've noticed with even for some people who are in different religions, they've been going to Catholic school, I mean, pretty much all their life, and pretty much they know two different cultures. And sometimes they will migrate if they're like on the verge of like a Lutheran or Episcopalian or Presbyterian type religion. They will become easier becoming Catholic because they have been in Catholic school all their life, and pretty much most of their life they've been celebrating as being Catholic in one sense.
Exactly. But you have to understand that it's not only those who were similar to Catholicism that have been evangelized or converted to the Catholic faith. In my experience of serving as pastor of St. Alphonsus Rock Church, it grew from a parish of about 150 families to over 1,200 families with 400 converts from the Church of God in Christ, from Baptists, AME. People came because what they were saying is that not only are we experiencing our faith, we are experiencing a praying spirit. We're really receiving the preached word of God, and it's being taught in ways that they can understand. And also what was important was that their African identity, their African-American culture was being celebrated in the ritual of their Catholic faith. And I think as Catholics, one of the blessings we have is that African people are, by and large, innately a ritualistic people. And with the symbols and ritual and liturgy that we have in the Catholic Church, it speaks to an African heart and an African sensibility that is in us. And so I think that if the Catholic Church would continue to use in cultural adaptation in the liturgy and in the worship and the music, African Americans will feel a home. Feel at home in the Catholic Church. A lot of people say, "Oh, I'm getting this evangelization program. I'm going to get a brochure together, and I'm going to go through the neighborhood, and I'm going to invite people to come to the Catholic faith." And my question to them is, "What are you inviting them to?" As my mother used to tell me, you know, we have to get our house in order before you seek to invite someone in. And so,
wow.
I think that we really have to have a place of welcome for African-American Catholics in the church today.
Wow. Going back to the 60s, I mean, you have a lot of great leaders that have come out that particular period. I mean, they got the document, you know, In Spirit and Truth and Plenty of Good Room.
Right.
And there was a lot of scholarship during that time, from music through theology, through liturgy, for people to understand. And we had, like, this big old growth. I mean, solid communities. Huge,
yeah,
communities in the 70s, no, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Right.
What happened to all of a sudden at the turn of the 90s? I mean, we had wonderful conferences. I mean, people
right.
just lived for the conference to go to every single year. And then all of a sudden, at the turn of the 1990, you had some residual effects from that, and all of a sudden things started dying. Because I remember Unity Explosion came. No,
right.
It was another spinoff.
Yes.
And, you know, their biggest conference was in 1991 and 1992, that they had so many people, they had to move out of the airport, and they had a record 1,200 people at that conference, which exceeded more than the Rejoice Conference, which was like,
right.
you know, for
that,
a whole
that
week.
That was the precursor, the Rejoice Conference, then the Unity Explosion, and now the Light Conference is going on. What was happening was you had some very charismatic leaders. You had people who were very forthright in naming, claiming who they were as African-American Catholics. You can begin as a litany of who's who in Roman Catholic, Black Catholicism would be, you know, Clarence Joseph Rivers, Sister Thea Bowman, Archbishop Jim Like. You had all of the scholars such as Dr. Nathan Jones in catechesis. You had Cyprian Davis in history. You had Sister Addie Walker and Sister Eva Loomis in catechetics as well. We had canon lawyers. Everyone began to come together, and it was in 1978 that they formed the Black Catholic Theological Symposium, in which they gathered together and began to define who they were as African-American Catholics from a theological and interdisciplinary perspective. And as a result of that, in 1980, at Xavier University in New Orleans, the only historically Black and Catholic university in the country, or as they like to say, in the Western Hemisphere, Xavier became the home and the hub for the Institute for Black Catholic Studies, where it was a place for people to receive a Master's of Theology degree in Black Catholic Studies and a certificate in religious education or youth ministry, catechetics. So it has become a hub. But what we are finding, and if I could just cut through the chase here, my brother Tim, and simply say to you, African American Catholics, the problem has been is that we are no longer the soup du jour. We are no longer the soup of the day, because as our Hispanic brothers and sisters began to grow, and they're the largest of the, I don't like to use the term minority, but of those non-dominant culture group, the Latino community is emerging. The Roman Catholic Church in America has put it in black and white in writing and saying that culturally, if any of the other cultural groups, that Latinos are who we're going to focus our emphasis on. We're going to put our funding, our programming. Many of our offices of Black Catholics are either have been just dismissed or have been merged as a multicultural group. There is no longer a sense of our strong identity And it's a sense of you have to evangelize and bring blacks to the Catholic Church, whereas most of the Latinos are already Catholic, so why don't we put our emphasis on them? And I just think it's very unfair, and it's not Christ-like, nor is it really what the Catholic Church is all about. We're all invited to be one. And so I think to say one group is over another causes some tension among us, you know, and that should not take place. I love my Latino brothers and sisters, and I want to share equally the joy of being Catholic with them.
Wow. So out of this, this particular focus, I've seen a lot of some musicians, fortunate enough, were able to go from an all-black church, and now even, which is a good point, a lot of, I'm going to say white churches, you know, in one sense, they're now can become music directors and liturgists, and now predominantly white churches in the suburbs, which is a huge thing to have a African-American person over music and liturgy, and we found that movement, those walls start to come down.
Because our white brothers and sisters want good worship as well. They want good music. When I was pastor of the Rock Church in St. Louis, while I was in the inner city, a predominantly African-American Catholic parish, our parish, as it grew, it was 99.8% African-American. When I first got there, when I left, it was 30% white, 70% black. So, you know, a lot of our white brothers and sisters, they want a church that is alive. They want the word to be preached. They want the fullness of participating in the sacraments and in the Eucharist that is so important to them as well. I believe that African Americans have a tremendous gift to share with the global Roman Catholic Church.
Wow. So what happened, you know, even at the Focus, and a lot of the black offices start to close, now they rename it to African-American descent, or they just combine it to one particular ministry. Do you think because of the closing the offices, is it because of financial, or you think it because they decide just going to refocus into a different direction?
Well, in the words of my beloved spiritual mother, Sister Thea Bowman, Tim, can I give you the true truth?
Okay.
Yeah, the true truth, Tim, would simply be this, is that I find that there is a lack of growth among African-American Catholics, and we're hemorrhaging because I don't believe, one, that our preaching style is reaching the congregation, especially to our younger group. They find Mass to be boring. They find that the preaching is irrelevant. It doesn't speak to where they are. There's also a sense that in some Catholic churches, the music isn't inviting or it's not participatory. I find that a lot of our young people don't feel that they are accepted in roles of leadership and ministry. In my revivals and missions, I stopped having a youth night. I said, why do we relegate our youth to just one day of a revival when, you know, they should be in the church every night and an integral part of that worshiping body? You know, when we put our kids on the sideline, we're saying you only matter just in a little bit, or we'll highlight you one day. No, we need to lift up our young people each and every day and to secure them not only as our future, but they're our present. They're our right now. And we need to safeguard them and encourage them and promote their role in the Catholic Church. And I don't think that's happening enough as well.
So with the leadership itself, I know we're getting a lot of priests from Africa that's starting to come in, and some other countries as well, just not even
India,
just placing Africa.
Poland, yes.
Yeah.
Black
you think there's a big cultural difference that they can't relate to? Is it just, you know, just relating to be American is not the only complaint, but also if you look at other churches as well, they don't understand the culture.
Right.
Being American, you think that's also the problem with that, or why are they leaving?
Right, we don't have priests that can serve our communities. It's rare when we get African American young men to go to the seminary and to persevere on to priesthood, and that's why it's always a great day when one gets ordained. And it's important that we have our own indigenous leadership. But there's a lot of factors. There have been seminarians who have gone to the seminary, but the seminary doesn't always embrace who they are, do not try to reach out to their culture. In fact, you are more or less expected to assimilate into the dominant culture of the seminary, and that's a sin before God. No one should ever have to give up their whole personhood in order to serve God in the Roman Catholic Church.
So what type of personhood that they have to give up, who they are?
Well, in many ways, you know, there's not going to be any cultural expression in the liturgy that is in the seminary. You know, everything is pretty much going to be from a European-based worship perspective. Our seminaries does not have classes. It speaks of, you know, like for instance, Cyprian Davis's book and his course on the history of Black Catholics. I think in the United States of America, in all of our seminaries, that course should be mandated for everyone, you know, to learn the culture of the people in this country. I also feel that in preaching style, that while you're going to be preaching in basically a European area, fine, there is what they call basic fundamentals of preaching, but I think we need to be exposed to other realms of preaching, such as an African-American Black preaching style, you know. So not that they have to take on that style, but they're at least exposed to it and know that there is more than one way to worship in our faith and in our church.
Okay. Taking that, for example, the seminaries are really academia, and I guess they say, okay, we give you the foundations, give you the theology, give you the history, give you the whole meal itself. Then it's up to you to take, hopefully, to take that and go do some life training with some other, you know, workshops and other things like that. Is that the expectation? We'll teach you the foundations and the things that make us who we are in history, or then up to you as a seminarian to go out, or when you become an associate priest or pastor or pastor themselves, to go out and continue to educate yourself?
In fairness to some of our diocesan seminaries throughout the country, I know that they have, call it urban immersion or inner city immersion, that they will spend some time in the inner city, and I commend them for that. And there are some priests. In fact, there's a diocesan priest in Chicago. I mean, he's a seminarian. He's about to be ordained, and he really wants to serve in the African-American community. So he's chosen that. And so I commend the times when it happened. But you don't see a lot of diocesan priests wanting to run to the inner city to serve the Black community. They want to go to the posh and the comfortable parishes.
To get their own budget, net. I guess if they took the effort and built the other parishes, less work, you know. Even the smaller churches, sometimes those are a lot easier than dealing with the cities that we have now at 3,000, 4,000, 8,000, 10,000 families. I'd take a church at 500 families in a day.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Have to deal with the headaches and the staffing that you have to. You really have to be a business to handle a parish of, you know, 1,000 families or more is more demanding of your time.
Tim, we get so caught up in the whole notion of how many people we have sitting in our churches. If we began to look at our parishes as, let's look at the numbers, not only those that are sitting in the pews, which is very important, but what kind of service, how many people are we serving that are not in our churches, you know? Are we really being Catholic to those who are perhaps not Catholic, those who need our counseling, those who need our concern, those who need us to be their voice for justice? I feel that we also have to do that as well, you know. So it's a both end. And I think the Catholic Church, especially in our documents, it's well written on paper. We just have to begin to enact that and to reach out to people. And no matter what size or what locale or demographic your church finds itself in.
Do you think the priests look at, you know, they do, you know, they say, okay, you go to this parish when the either the bishop ask or the committee ask, they don't have the full facts in front of them. They say, well, the offer is made, but they don't have the whole facts of the church. And they say, man, nah, I don't really want to go there. But, you know, I've noticed a lot of churches, I'm just going to speak with Houston because I know what Houston, at least I know what Wichita, Kansas, Mother of Mercy, Mother of Mercy, a 2,100 family parish for the longest, and it kind of died down in the turn of the 2000. But, you know, they were taking in $18,000 a week.
Right.
That is a lot of money. That is almost as much as the suburban parish who has 1,500 families. And they notice they usually get spikes in their collection when they have a good homily.
Right, right.
It's amazing that homily makes a difference, because just speaking for that one particular church, that, you know, when Chuck Andrus was there, they were averaging $20,000 a week, which is really comfortable towards a lot of churches across the country.
But Was there 2,100 families?
It was 2,100 families at the turn of 2000, and they started dying down.
And they were bringing $20,000 in a week.
They're probably, yeah, they were doing like 16, 18 when Chuck got there, Father Chuck got there. They were going as high as 24, and they're averaging 18 and 24. And once he left, then it kind of taper off down to 15.
Let me just say this. I think we have to talk about stewardship as Roman Catholics. We, for so long, we have been a missionary church where the good white missionaries came and took care of us. We need to understand biblical tithing and begin to give God our first fruits of giving. When you tell me that Our Mother Mercy Houston back in that era of time had 2,100 families and they were giving 18 to at max 24, that's actually very low, because my parish at the Rock Church, we had 1,200 max, and we were giving that amount. So I don't think we are really tithing and understanding that what is required. What the Roman Catholic Church is saying to Black Catholics in America is that we want you to have ownership, stewardship, and leadership. Those are the ships we need to get on, you know, ownership, leadership, stewardship, to begin. Because unless you own something, unless you pay for something, unless you lead something, it's not yours. And I think for many Catholics, blacks in the Catholic Church, we just go to Mass, you know, we pray, pay, and obey, and we move on. And that is not what we're called to do. We're supposed to be fully functioning. Our baptismal call calls us to lead and to own. And for so many black Catholics, even in this 21st century, look at the Catholic Church as Father's Church. And I'm not, you know, I don't own that. When you can own something, you can move it. And I found that to be so true in my pastoral experience.
Wow. And the reason I made that comparison, because I look across the country at some of the Anglo churches, they're doing probably the same thing at the same, you know, maybe like 1,500 families. They're at 20,000 or 18,000.
Yeah, right.
So it's them as well. It's not just
on
that one sense.
Catholics don't give according. Our Protestant brothers and sisters for outgive because they understand the discipline of biblical tithing.
So why the Catholic Church don't ask? Is a sense of just not asking? They just don't want to talk about it.
Well, they do. They do in their own way. But we talk about tithe, time, and treasure, and we do annual stewardship appeals. And they have diocesan programs for stewardship. But if it's trying to break it's a behavioral habit, you know, and to really let people understand the blessings of God, and you know, even asking for 10%, you know, that's not being very even generous. 10% is nothing when God says you can have 90%, you know, and if we really biblically tithe, as I used to tell my parishioners, then if we begin to tithe, we don't have to worry about anything. We don't have to have bake sales and dances and bingo, you know, and all that other stuff Catholics do. We need to just pay our money, and we can celebrate the first fruits that we all have given. And I think that's very important.
The last couple of questions when it comes to the future of Black Catholics. Where do you see where we're going today, and what do you think we're going to be in the next 5 or 10 years?
I have some major concerns. Just so that you and your listeners know that the National Black Catholic Congress recently, a few months ago, had commissioned professors at the University of Notre Dame to do a survey, a sociological survey on the future of Catholicism among Black Catholics. And I've read some of the findings, and while it's some impressive and commendatory findings, there's still a sense that Catholics are very concerned about, Black folks are very concerned about their membership in the Catholic Church. They're concerned about their young people not attending. They don't feel that we are getting any recognition nor being truly feeling like we're full participants in the Catholic Church. What I would have to say in the future is that we have to begin to get part of that spirit that we had in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s, a sense of excitement and ownership, but it's not happening because we don't have, many of us don't even have priests that can speak our language clearly and understandably, let alone to get to know our culture. We have a lot of people that are not feeling like there's a sense of ownership in their church either.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I don't know. The future is not looking well at this time, and I believe that our National Black Catholic Congress, I think our African American bishops, I think our laity, Office of Black Catholics and the Institute of Black Catholic Studies, I believe there needs to be a summit in which we need to talk about the real issues that are facing us, and not just simply come for workshops and have conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's my response.
Do you think it's going to happen? The dialogue?
I pray it needs to happen. As just one lone priest, I feel like sometimes I feel like John the Baptist being a voice in the wilderness. You know, I think that it's just going to come to a head. That is what's needed. And I think there's a lot of fear among hierarchy about letting a Black folks get in the room and really speak the true truth.
Hmm. Wow.
And so I don't think that's being encouraged, quite frankly.
Do you have a solution be, well, I guess to sit down and talk, you don't know during the conference this year, is those things going to be voiced? Or are they going to have a solution? Or are they just continue just going to meet every 5 years and go from there?
I saw the proposed agenda for the Black Catholic Congress, National Black Catholic Congress, and they're going to talk about the Notre Dame survey, but I don't think they're going to talk about solutions that will bring about immediate change. Because you have to realize we're part of a hierarchical church. A hierarchy means that, you know, we adhere to the rules of the leadership that governs us. And it's a long time coming to get where we were, and I think it'll be another long time. I believe, like the scripture says, a grain of wheat must fall, and unless it falls into the ground and dies, then it remains a single grain. I think some things are going to have to change for us to continue to grow again as Roman Catholics, Africans and African Americans in the Roman Catholic Church.
Wow. Anything you want to leave us with?
I just want the perceptions often, Tim, of Catholicism among African Americans are just off kilter. I hope that your listeners will read, study, and understand the roots of Catholicism. And when you do, we were there. And when I think of Catholicism, even when Christopher Columbus got lost in 1492 and showed up on the at St. Augustine, Florida, there was a man with him of color named Esteban, which is Steve in Spanish. But Esteban mm-hmm. was with Christopher Columbus when he got lost and showed up here on these shores, and he was Catholic. So there was an African Spaniard Catholic there when Christopher Columbus showed up. So we have been in this country for a long time, and we have been a part of it, and there's been major contributions made by many, many, many Catholics of African descent. I just want you to understand, read, dialogue, and to learn to appreciate our faith, as I do.
Wow. Well, again, thank you for coming in and sharing us that information. Any resources that you can point our listeners to if they want to know more about the faith itself and about the culture of Black Catholics?
Yes. I would ask, first and foremost, if you want to know about the Catholic faith, check on the website of the United States Catholic Conference of Catholic Bishops, based in Washington, D.C. They will give you a lot of resources about the Catholic faith, how to find a local parish that I hope will be welcoming and inviting. And if you want to know more about Roman Catholics who are African-American in descent, Black Catholics in the United States of America, please check out Father Cyprian Davis's book, The History of Black Catholics in the United States of America. Also, there's a book just recently came out that I think it is a must-read. It is called Racial Justice in the Catholic Church by Father Brian Massengale. And that really talks about where we are, and I think it brings a lot of solutions to what we need to our problems for today.
Okay. And also, of course, you did mention there there are seminars and in New Orleans at, was it Xavier?
Oh, of course. Oh, my Lord. As a professor there, I should really speak about that. The Institute for Black Catholic Studies is a wonderful, currently three-week program, runs the last week of June and the first 2 weeks of July each summer on the campus of Xavier University in New Orleans. You can check that out at Xavier University's website, www.xula.edu. Check under the Graduate Studies tab. You will find the Institute for Black Catholic Studies. It's a great program. Any Catholics or even non-Catholic listeners who are interested, I look forward to seeing you there in the Big Easy, the Crescent City, this summer.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on to the program. And I have to ask this question. Have you been to Sweetie Pies?
Ah, you see, thinking about St. Louis. I have to admit, I moved from St. Louis 10 years ago, so Sweetie Pies was not yet open, but you're reading my mind because they just built that new upper crust Sweetie Pies. It's just walking distance from my former church, St. Alphonsus Rock Church in St. Louis. So I will get there, and for you, Tim, I will say hello to Miss Robbie and to Tim for you at Sweetie Pies.
No problem. Really appreciate it. Well, thank you for coming on the program again. Thank you so much for the night.
All right. God bless you now.
Okay.
God bless your listeners.
Same here. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Again, you can download this episode on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio or Blog.Apple Capital Group or even podcast feed. Thank you for listening to the program, everybody, and have a great Tuesday. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.